and you're gonna have a gun.
All right, a gun?
Yeah, a gun. Okay. Don't worry about the gun, and then you're gonna help me get into the bank.
Okay, I'm gonna just through the front door.
Like that's what.
Yeah.
Hello and welcome to episode 48 of the Midnight Triple Feature podcast. You can find us on the web at midnighttriplefeature.blogspot.com, on Twitter and Facebook at MT Feature. You can subscribe to our channels through iTunes, Stitcher Smart Radio, and YouTube. And as always, you can send feedback and requests to midnighttriplefeature@gmail.com. Episode 48 is a two-parter, and you're listening to part one. In this episode, we'll be discussing three ripoffs. First up is the ripoff of The Exorcist, Abby, followed by Child's Play ripoff, Dolly Dearest, and the Nightmare on Elm Street Bollywood ripoff, Mahakal. This podcast will contain spoilers. Enjoy.
Alright, welcome to this episode of Midnight Triple Feature. Thank you for listening, thank you for downloading. I'm Mike, Adam's here.
Hello.
So, I know it broke on Sunday. I texted you at like, I don't know, 9:30 or something.
Yeah, I was like already in bed.
Oh yeah. If you haven't heard already, Wes Craven died. And if you don't know him, then you definitely know his work.
Right.
I think his very first movie was Last House on the Left.
Well, he did a porno in the 60s. Oh, yeah? Yeah. So a lot of people probably don't know. He actually did do one porno. That was like his first movie or something. I think he was just out of college or in college, or he was a college professor or something. And then he transitioned porno, and then it would be Last House on the Left. That would obviously be the one that everybody knew him for, or at least think of as his first movie.
Yeah, you know. A Connecticut-based film, too, right here on home.
Connecticut, well, I mean, we did an episode on it.
Yeah.
Sean Cunningham produced it. It, yeah, like, interesting thing about Wes Craven, you know, is that he's got, like, a lot of movies, right? And he's got, like, this handful of movies that are really good. And he's, like, one of those rare directors who has had, like, a movie in three different decades that has been, like, really influential and important. So, you know, 1972 had Last House on the Left, which kind of had this huge impact on exploitation films and horror, and in terms of sort of what people were willing to put on screen and also how they were willing to market it to the public, and about sort of gimmickry and things like that. And then you get into the 80s, obviously, like 1984, you had Nightmare on Elm Street, and that just kind of completely changed at that point the slasher genre, really, right? Because The slasher movie was dead by 84. It really was done. It had run its course. And then in 84, Nightmare on Elm Street comes out and kind of changes everything. From that point on, you can, at least in some of the movies, like if you watch even the Friday the 13th movies, they almost change a bit after Nightmare on Elm Street, especially after like Dream Warriors, when Freddy became like this, you know, persona. And then you start to see Friday the 13th start to incorporate comedy and different things into their movie, and I do think in a way that is reactionary to what they did with Nightmare on Elm Street. Those movies were making so much money. And then obviously in what, 97 or not, yeah, 97, 98, you had Scream.
96.
Was it 96? It had to be later than that. Was it 96? Maybe it was 96.
People Under Stairs, 91, 1996.
All right, yeah. Okay, so 96, Scream comes out, and Scream just, for better or worse, I mean, you know, a lot of people shit on Scream now. It's really popular to do that. Now, all of a sudden, he's dead. Now, everybody loves Scream, right?
Yeah.
So, it's like, oh, Wes Craven dies, and everybody's like, oh, Scream's so great. But, fucking, I was just reading people, like, as early as 2 months ago, talking about how overrated the movie was.
That whole movie's weird.
Yeah.
I actually enjoy it. I liked it when it first came out.
It hasn't aged that well, right?
No.
No. I mean, we're going to be honest, it hasn't. And it because it's it of what it created, it has that, like,
it's just that weird because everything I've been reading, people I've been talking to, you talk about Wes Craven, that's the first movie. They don't say Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, unless they're...
A lot of people go to Scream, right?
Yeah, they immediately go to Scream, unless you're in, like, a circle with us or something, because we don't go to that movie first, but...
I mean, I go to, like, Nightmare on Elm Street, The Hills Have Eyes, Last House on the Left, People Under the Stairs. I mean, for me, those were probably the ones, as a kid, that really got me the most. Like, I remember watching...
1954, Walt Disney's Wonderful World of Color.
What's that?
I have no idea. It says he did one episode for him.
No, it's gotta be... There's no way. He was like... No way. He was...
1986.
He would have been like 10, 11 years old in 1954. You said 54, right?
No, it was he directed one episode in 1986.
Oh, 86. Okay, that makes sense, yeah. But I mean, like, for me, I still remember, like, when I saw The Hills Have Eyes and how blown away I was by that. I remember the first time I saw People Under the Stairs because my parents rented it on VHS. And I remember watching it with them and just being floored as, you know, an 8-year-old or 9-year-old and watching that movie incessantly, because it was just People Under the Stairs was such a weird movie. Can't even explain it, but like the things it had going on, like, because I watched it recently because I bought that Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a guy running around in a fucking gimp suit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's like, they fucking take this like 14-15 year old girl and they throw her in a fucking boiling hot tub of water, and it's like the mother and the father, brother and sister, and like there's all this shit going on that, as it, you know, like, I'm like, this movie's really fucking
twisted. There's people
in
the basement, people running through the walls, coming out of vents.
Yeah, it's just, it's such a crazy movie, and like...
The brother's got this weird leather suit.
That's what I see, he's running around in a gimp suit, man. Yeah. And it's like, I don't know, that movie alone was like so big to me when I was a kid. And then obviously you take, like I said... The Last House on the Left, I didn't really grow into that until I was older. I saw it way too young. I think I probably mentioned that when we did the review. I mean, I definitely saw it way too young, and it just was weird for me in that way. But as I got older, I really can appreciate that movie. I think it's highly flawed. I mean, the interesting thing about Craven's work is that it's not, you can't sit around and say that he directed like all gold, because he didn't.
No.
He's, and I've said this before, he's one of the like quote unquote horror masters. I've never even fully considered him one, because I feel he's got a lot of really mediocre work, but he definitely has a few like key movies that are so important that they can't be ignored. I still think, like, you know, I still always put him like slightly behind like a Carpenter, but I actually think he's more creative than like a Romero ever was. Even though Romero did a lot with themes like in Dawn of the Dead and stuff like that, I always thought Craven like did so many different kinds of things. You know, like he did, and you look at like Last House on the Left, and then you watch Scream, and then you watch Nightmare on Elm Street, and then you watch Swamp Thing. You know what I mean? Like, they're all completely different movies. And that's what I kind of, like, respect about him. Is he was willing to just do a lot of different shit. And Carpenter, to an extent, same thing. But, I don't know, it sucks that he's dead, you know?
Yeah.
And I have to say, like, so, for this episode, we're doing a Nightmare on Elm Street ripoff, the Bollywood one, right? So,
yeah.
I watch it, and then, like, he's dead, like, a week later. Right.
Yeah.
So then like the last episode, right, it's not out yet, but we reviewed Sledgehammer, and Ted Pryor died like the next day after we did that show.
That is weird. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think we need to like, I like if someone else dies, like if, I don't know if like, Frank Darabont or Chuck Russell dies, cause we're going to be doing The Blob later. If like one of them dies, or if, I don't know who else, Rob Zombie dies, then, you know, then we might have some weird shit
we
going on.
We got some awesome powers here.
Ted Pryor was a loss too. Nobody really talked about Ted. You know, it's like Wes Craven dies, and yeah, it's a big, you know, it's a big loss. But Ted Pryor was too. Ted Pryor is, if you look back and like look at his body of work. Sorry, I'm hitting the table.
Oh,
it's just as important to sort of genre fans and low budget film fans as Craven is to sort of bigger budget or exploitation fans. But
yeah
it sucks, man. You know.
He was in Jane, Silent Bob Strike Back.
Wes Craven was?
Yeah, he made a cameo. I think he played himself. Uh-huh. Played himself in that. I actually just re-bought that recently because it disappeared. But he was in that because I think wasn't Kevin Smith in Scream 3?
I didn't even see Scream. I've only seen the first two.
Well, actually, I think Jay and Silent Bob were in Scream. I think maybe they both were. I don't remember.
They weren't in the first one.
I think it was the third one.
Yeah, maybe. I wouldn't be surprised. Because
they're all in that Miramax circle, so.
Yeah, and Scream is very like meta and self-referential and all that good stuff, so it's. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, so that's a huge loss in the horror community.
Yeah. Everybody's talking about it, you know, and I feel kind of weird because, like, he dies and then everybody is writing shit and recording shit and everybody's all of a sudden, like, a day later has their Wes Craven retrospectives. And to me, that seemed like it never occurred to me, it would occur to me to be like, oh, we're going to do a special Wes Craven episode and put it out there. Because to me, it's too much like, Listen. Wes Craven's dead, so now we know you're going to listen to this show.
Not only that, a lot of the films that we've already named off, we've already talked about on the show numerous times.
Right, yeah.
So
I just didn't see any reason to try to like use it to our advantage in a way that I've seen other people, even though they say they're not, you are. I mean, in my opinion, if you are going to go the next day and record an episode of your podcast and post it in less than 24 hours after he's dead, then you're going to post it and say, we're not doing this to try to get downloads. We're doing this because we genuinely just loved his movies. You're also doing it for downloads, right? I mean,
yeah, there'd be really no other reason to do it that fast.
Right? You don't get what I'm saying, right? You didn't exactly take your time, did you? You had to get it out as fast as you could.
Yeah.
To me, it's almost like just, I don't know, trying to use that to your advantage, which isn't something that I was all that interested in. So we're just going to throw it at the beginning of the show here, and that's that, you know?
Yeah. No, it's definitely a loss, but
You
want to do... Let's see, you got a list of anything?
Yeah, it's in my head, though, so I got to remember it.
Oh, it's in your head. You can't always trust your head. No way I'm trusting my head, so I type mine on my phone. Now, here's a weird thing, because when you texted me, you said, make a list, either rip-off or remakes.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I was like, can I do both? Can I mix them up?
I mixed them up.
Oh, did you?
Sort of.
Yeah, I said to myself, well, my favorite movie is a remake.
All right.
So I just went with all remakes and I did them off the top of my head. So there's probably someone's going to go, why the hell did you name this and this?
Because
it was just in my head. I didn't look anything up. I didn't search anything.
I just go by my gut. Whatever I think, whatever movie's coming to my head. So whether it's a ripoff or a remake, like I said, I have both.
I wrote six. I'm going to skip the first one I wrote down, and I'll just tell you that one afterwards because you're going to laugh at me. But it was one of the first ones that actually came to my head. So I'll save that one for last.
All right.
You just want to go through them or you want to go back and forth?
Yeah, we'll go back and forth.
Okay. So the first one I wrote down was the Carrie remake.
I thought you didn't like that one.
Mm.
I didn't see it.
You didn't see it? It's not that I didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was done well. And I thought it was done slightly differently than the first one. It's not my favorite remake, don't get me wrong. I don't want people to run out there and watch this and be like, what a piece of shit.
Right.
But it was one of the first ones that came to my head. I saw it in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
I think I talked to you right after that. I didn't really care for it. And then I rewatched it again and I was like, you know what? It's really not that bad. So that was my first one.
That was sort of like an honorable mention type thing. Like, it didn't make your list, right? Or did it?
Well, I have a list of stuff.
All right.
And I skipped.
Oh, all right.
Yeah,
right. I got you.
Yeah, so I'll start with that one.
All right. Yeah, I haven't seen that one, so I can't comment on it. My number five is like a collection of ripoffs. So it's like, I'm just kind of bunching them in because there's like some of my favorite ripoffs are all within this one group. And it's the Gremlins ripoffs that came out in like the 80s. So it would be, and they're not necessarily ripoffs in the fact that they actually even resemble gremlins, but just in the fact that they tried to cash in on that concept of like a small creature. So, okay. You know what I mean? So I'm thinking like Critters, Ghoulies 2, Munchies.
You always forget Ghoulies 1.
It's funny because Ghoulies 1 is obviously the actual ripoff of Gremlins,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
But Ghoulies 2, the sequel to the ripoff of Gremlins, is the better movie. So Ghoulies 2 and Munchies, which is the Roger Corman. Now that is a ripoff of Gremlins. Like Munchies.
Yeah.
That's about this little creature that this guy finds in a cave. And then if you like cut it in half, it becomes two. So it doesn't multiply with water. It multiplies by just like cutting it into pieces. So if you cut it into like five pieces, now you have five Munchies. And of course, Roger Corman's Munchies are like perverts. So like they go and they look up women's skirts and stuff and they try to like watch women undress. And
it is a very enjoyable movie.
Yeah. You've seen Munchies?
Yeah. It was on Netflix for a while. I think it's off now.
It's a lot of fun. Yeah. Like a really dumb PG rated Roger Corman movie from the '80s. But, you know, like that whole slew of movies, because I was such a big Gremlins fan as a kid. That movie was huge. Like, that movie was huge in turning me into a fan of films like that, along with Ghostbusters and, oddly enough, like The Wizard of Oz and some others were, like, really influential as a kid. So the Gremlins ripoffs were a big deal to me because I was always looking for more of that because I just loved it so much. So that's why those movies will always kind of have a place. Like, Critters, the first two Critters movies are just sort of endlessly rewatchable for me. I absolutely love those movies. And same thing with that Ghoulies sequel.
You know? So finally get the toilet scene.
That's yeah, like they did everything right. Everything they did wrong in the first one, they did right in the second one. That's why. They knew what they fucked up in that first movie and they fixed it.
The whole movie's fucked up.
So that's my number five, Gremlins ripoffs.
Oh, mine aren't in any special order, so. But my next
I'm ordering them, but I wouldn't really necessarily say my number one would be my number one. I'm just kind of...
My number one actually is my number one, but the other ones are just kind of thrown together. So my next one would be the 2013 remake of the 1981 film, The Evil Dead.
Okay.
I actually enjoyed that remake. Mm-hmm. We got to see the midnight showing of it, and it came out. I've watched it numerous times afterwards, and... I don't know. People shit on that, and I really enjoy it.
It's funny. I've only seen it that one time still. Like, that one time we saw it in the theater. And I liked it. I enjoyed it. I remember having, like, some issues with it, but overall, I found it to be pretty good.
Yeah, it's definitely got its issues, but it's not as bad as everybody says it is.
No, it's definitely not. And if it weren't Evil Dead, people would like it a lot more, you know, because it has exactly what people want. Like, when you hear horror fans complain today, they complain about, you know, we don't get enough practical effects and we don't get enough like really good gore and we don't get enough, you know, like nonstop sort of, you know, like even like we get too many boo scares. We get too much of this, too much of that. And Evil Dead did try to deliver the opposite of those things. You know, like if anything, it gives you exactly what you want in terms of effects.
And then you just complain because of the name.
Right, that's right. You know, my one complaint walking away was, like, that opening scene just needs to be cut.
Yeah, the whole drug thing?
No, like, the scene where they burn that girl or whatever in that.
Oh, yeah,
they
that.
They need to cut that completely.
They didn't need that. They could have just put the book in the basement and moved on.
Exactly. Yeah. But, like, that movie
I agree with you on that.
That's a solid movie. If you're going to complain about remakes, man, no, that's not one to complain
about. That's definitely not one.
Yep. So. My number four is the Dawn of the Dead remake from 2004.
Okay.
So the interesting thing about Dawn of the Dead remake is when I first saw it, I walked away kind of like, I wasn't really sure. And then sort of over subsequent viewings, I like very quickly just kind of like fell in love with that movie. And it's partially because like that, the opening scene is so good. It's like those first, say, 10 minutes of that movie are probably some of the best 10 minutes like in modern horror, right? Like I would put that out there that opening scene is probably one of the most effective opening scenes in a horror movie in years, like at least within the last, you know, 15 years. And the rest of the movie, I think, sort of continues to be successful on the back of that. Some of the flaws of the movie are that they bring in too many characters midway through that they don't need. they didn't stick enough to the formula of the first one, which was sort of the smaller group. They made the group too big. But some of the things that they do differently, I liked. I liked that they said, all right, fuck it, we're going to have the zombies run. Perfectly fine with that, because, you know, you're going to make something different, at least just go for it, do something different. They basically made an action movie instead. You know, so instead of making, like, this more sort of... it's not a smart movie in the way that George Romero's Dawn of the Dead is smart. You know, it's not concerned with being a thinking man's horror movie. It's concerned with being an exciting horror movie. And I think it delivers that. I think it delivers actually several pretty good characters. And, I mean, I think the effects are good. I think there's some good comedy. There's some actually really decent horror in it. It's a little bit too long.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. I enjoy it too, but it's over, what, like 2 hours and 5 minutes or something?
Yeah, it's a little bit too long, but that first Dawn of the Dead movie is well over 2 hours.
Yeah.
And so, like, excuse me, I still stand by that. And despite the slew of remakes it is sort of created, you have to go back and look at, and for, again, this is for better or worse as well, there's two movies responsible for the fact that we're still watching zombies today, and it's 28 Days Later and Dawn of the Dead. Those two movies came out back to back, right within the same time frame, and they single-handedly revived the zombie genre, and it has not stopped. Like, we're still, like, that is, if you really think about that, that it's been 10 years, and you know the zombies, now obviously The Walking Dead has had a lot to do with maintaining it, because when that came back, it helped sort of keep it going, revive. If that hadn't come, I think it would be gone by now.
Yeah.
But the fact that I still think those two movies revived a genre that had been dead since, like, God, 86, 87, I mean, if you count, like, Return to the Living Dead Part 2 as sort of, like, one of the last gasps, then you're looking at easily 16 years before Dawn of the Dead came out and 28 Days Later came out.
Yeah, and there's been so many since.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it really is amazing.
You know, you got the Walking Dead spinoff, and then you have so many other indie films. Mm-hmm. I mean, we just got bombarded with zombie movies after that. So
yeah, and that was a huge influence. Yeah, Walking Dead has just sort of put more juice into it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's based off of that. And it just helped fuel it.
Right.
My next remake, I don't know if you can consider it a remake, but it was the 2014 Godzilla.
I still haven't seen it.
Now, people have so many issues with this, and I every time I talk to somebody, I get the exact same argument.
I think I know what it is.
Eliminate the first Godzilla, because it's not based off the original Godzilla.
Mm-hmm.
Technically, it's not based off the original Godzilla.
No, right.
People always go, there's not enough Godzilla in it.
Right, I knew that's what you were going to say.
Eliminate the first Godzilla, because that was the one that had the most Godzilla in it, and watch some of the other Godzilla films. Now, I haven't seen every single Godzilla film, but I've seen a majority of them, and they're on screen about the same amount of time. So why was it this one that they attacked with that argument and not any of the other ones?
I know why. Because they didn't see the other movies.
Probably not.
Right? That is why. Like, they wouldn't admit that. You're never going to see anybody admit that. Like, you're not going to see anybody be like, this movie didn't have enough Godzilla in it. Godzilla in it. It's a Godzilla movie. Why isn't Godzilla in it? And then you'd be like, well, have you seen other Godzilla movies? And they'd be like, well, yeah. And then you'd be like, okay, so you should know that Godzilla is not the predominant sort of feature in those movies. And they won't be able to, I guarantee you, those people have not watched Godzilla movies. They say they have, but they're lying.
Yeah.
Telling you right now, people are lying. People out there say they've seen shit that they haven't seen because they just want to, I don't know, look like they've seen it.
Yeah, I don't know.
But somebody went out there and actually did a comparison and actually, like, logged time in the Godzilla movies.
I almost did that myself.
Yeah, and said, this is how much time, on average, Godzilla is on screen in these movies. It is comparable. Like, comparable in a way that's, like, identical in a way, you know, in terms of time frame to what every other movie had, except for that, maybe that first movie.
The first one, and I wouldn't count Godzilla vs. King Kong.
No.
Like, where he's doing drop kicks. And,
no, but even then, like, but, no. No.
Because he does have a lot of screen time there, but...
Like, one of the major concerns I've always had about Godzilla movies is that he's not in it enough all along, you know what I mean? I've always said that. But I does, you know, I'm not gonna be a fucking look like a fucking moron.
No, this movie had some great action scenes.
Yeah.
It was just really enjoyable. I loved it. It's actually out on DVD now. I was thinking about picking it up on Blu-ray because the copy I have is shit. But that was mine.
All right. My number three. Let me see which one I go with next. So I'm like, I have three, but I'm like, I don't know which one. I'm going to go with, this is an interesting one actually, because it's a combo, but it's a ripoff and a remake. So 1978's Piranha, which is a ripoff of Jaws, and then the remake of Piranha.
Yeah, that would have been on my list,
right?
Too.
So, like, it's the original Piranha, which is the ripoff, and then the remake of Piranha, which is obviously the remake. So it's both, because that first movie is, like, again, another Corman one, man, because Corman was the king of ripoff, right? Corman and, what's his name? Dante, they just made... Piranha is an amazing movie.
I love Piranha. So good.
It's like, it's mind-boggling because it's definitely a ripoff of Jaws. Like, it hits a lot of the same notes. You have, it's not like a police officer, but you have this guy who lives out in the woods, whatever. There's a female scientist that shows up, right? And she sort of helps, and no one wants to listen. There's the fucking park, like that water park thing that, like, the guy that's basically like the mayor from Jaws, he knows about the piranha, but he's like, I want to open up the park anyway. And then he opens it and fucking people get eaten. And so it's got like all these elements, but then they just did something so unexpected with it. You know, it's like, it's funny. It's kind of scary. It's gory. I just absolutely love them. We did an episode on Piranha too. So
yeah, the one thing I love about Piranha, not too many other films do this. Jaws didn't even do it. When Jaws comes, it's the music. The
Yeah.
But in Piranha, it's actually the fish, like the fish chattering. Yeah, it's so awesome. I love that so much in that.
It's a great movie. And it's similar to Jaws, too, in the fact that, like, it's one of those movies that when you watch it, it just feels like summer in a way. The fact that most of it takes place during the day and the way it's shot, it's really bright. And I don't know, it's just... That movie is just so watchable. It's so much fun, you know? So, and the remake as well. I think the remake is really strong, actually. I think they took that original property, sort of amped it all the way up and said, all right, we're going to take that. We're just going to go fucking off the wall. And they went sort of pure comedy and high gore, and I think it actually works pretty well. So.
Yeah. No, definitely enjoyable. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody's seen it, and if you haven't, definitely
Piranha's,
go find out.
Piranha's a must see. Really
not
is.
Piranha 3D on Netflix. Not that one.
That's the one I like. Wait, I like Piranha 3D, not 3DD.
Oh, yeah, 3DD.
Yeah.
Not that one.
The first remake, not the second one. Yeah. Actually, that was the third one because they remade it in 95, but I'm not counting that one.
All right, so mine here, I was debating whether this was considered a remake or considered a ripoff. Because this is another one of my favorite movies. My next two are some of my favorite ones of all time. Mm-hmm. And that is A Fistful of Dollars from 1964. So is it considered a remake because...
The court thought so, right?
Yeah, well, you got Yojimbo.
Right.
Just a couple of years before that, or the year before
that.
He
lost, right? They had to pay, so yeah.
Yeah, they did.
They had to pay, so...
Yeah, so I don't know if it was a full ripoff or if it was just a remake of it. But it... Fistful of Dollars is awesome.
It's
love Fistful of Dollars.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah.
You know, guy comes into town and just starts cleaning shit up. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of the best Western scenes you'll see, you know, like when he's walking down and he says to the casket guy, you know, get three of those ready.
Yeah.
And he goes down
good.
And he shoots all those guys. He walks back up and he goes, make that four. And just keeps going. It's just such a great movie.
Yeah.
If you don't like Westerns...
It doesn't matter. You'll
like this.
It doesn't mean you don't have to like Western. So like these movies transcend Western. Like they're not John Wayne. You know what I mean? These are completely different types of movies. And all three of those, like, they make my regular watch list, really. I love them all. I'd love to see them in a theater. And one more that's
awesome.
Really worth your time is Once Upon a Time in the West, which was Sergio Leone's movie. Like, he made it after those three. And if you haven't seen that one, it's got Charles Bronson in it. That one is absolutely amazing. I saw that for the first time back in the spring, and that movie's fucking insane. It was on Netflix. Really good.
It's in my Netflix queue
it's
still.
Really,
yeah,
if you
it's still
seen
on
it,
there.
You need to watch. It's really good.
Yep.
My number two, then, it'd be David Cronenberg's The Fly of 1986. So, like, this is a movie that, I mean, when I first saw it, like, scared the ever-living shit out of me as a kid. Because David Cronenberg does body horror really well. And I think the thing he did with The Fly that was just so, like, important in terms of how you're going to handle a remake is he took the thing about The Fly, that original movie, that is probably the most terrifying, which is the transformation into a fly. Like, yeah, what that does to your body. And he put that out there on screen in, like, gory detail. And he, that is, there's so many scenes in that movie that are just disgusting and uncomfortable. And watching this guy sort of come apart in a way, like, physically and mentally, at the fact that he's transforming into this thing. And how in a lot of ways, you know, it, in the beginning, it's like this, it's actually a good thing. Like, he's almost like a superhero in a way. Like, he has extra, like, he has more strength than he has. He's, you know, like, he can, he just has all these, all of his senses and everything almost heightened. He's almost like a superhuman. And then, like, the hair starts sprouting and, like, slowly but surely he just starts to, like, gooify. And I was at a convention once and this guy was selling, like, the box set of the original Fly. It's like, you know, The Fly, Return of the Fly, Son of the Fly, or whatever it is.
I think, yeah, like, I've only seen the first one.
Me too. And I was like, oh, yeah. I was like, oh, you got The Fly. I'm like, that's pretty sweet. I'm like, I still think the remake's better. Like, I said it to this guy who is not going to agree with me at all. And he was like, oh, the remake's terrible. And it's like, why? You know, like, why? Give me a reason. And, like, the only reason really is that it's just not the original. That's, you, this, I'm all for being like, fuck remakes, man, but The Fly took a property that a lot of people are pretty attached to and made it into the more watchable movie of the two. Like, I would watch David Cronenberg's The Fly any day over that original, because the original has that cheesy B-movie, like, 50s vibe to it.
Oh, for sure.
But it's not unsettling. It's not, it's kind of fun, but David Cronenberg's movie gets under your skin in a way that, you know, a lot of movies aren't able to pull off.
I actually remember, I don't even remember how old I was, but watching this, being like, that's fucked up. I don't know if I thought that in my head then, but back then I was like, that's fucked up.
Yeah.
Maybe not in those words because I was young. Maybe I wasn't swearing yet, but.
Right.
And then after, like, everything happens, I was like, that would be so cool for that to happen, you know? Like, I want to be the fly.
Well, not at the, like, end, man.
No, not at the end.
By the end, like, he's basically like, fucking, like, kill me.
Yeah. Like, yeah, that, he just wants, you know, to die at the end. But to be able to, like, have the powers and, like, the heightened vision.
No, and that's what I said. Yeah. Like, and they set it up that way. That's just kind of what I liked about it. And then you get to watch him.
The demise of the powers.
As a kid, man, that movie just, oh, that movie bothered me so bad. But I loved it at the same time. You know, it's like.
And it had that iconic cover, too.
Yeah, that him, slip, like, case in front of the transporter.
Yeah, like, it was like the green light,
Jeff,
or whatever.
Goldblum's just, like, kneeling down or whatever.
Yeah,
it's
that slip cover was awesome.
The Fox logo on it. Yeah. Like, yeah. Oh, my God. Great movie. So, I love The Fly.
Well, my number one is probably my favorite movie of all time. I watch this a few times a year. You know exactly what I'm going to say.
Yep.
1982's The Thing.
Yep.
And everybody's probably going, that's not a ripoff. That's not a ripoff. It is that.
It's a remake.
It's a remake.
Based
of,
on a book, so it's, you know.
Yeah, well, it's actually based off of The Thing from Another World.
Yeah, which was based off, there's a story, right? What's the book called? There's a book or a short story that they were all based off of.
Yeah, actually.
I forget what it's called.
If you, in the first Halloween, when he's watching, the little kid's watching the movie, that's what's on the TV.
Right.
Yeah, he's watching The Thing from Another World. I just love The Thing. I just, the all-male cast, down to, like, that sounded kind of weird, but.
A little bit. Yeah. Just a little.
But.
It's all right.
Just everything that goes down, trying to figure out who the thing is, where it's going, the blood, I love the blood test scene so much. Down to the point where it, when it's in the dog and it's morphing out of the dog, down to the end of the movie, right, when you're like, who is the thing? Is the thing still alive?
Right.
You know, which one is it? Just everything about that movie I love.
It's still a shame what happened when that movie came out, because it's like a known thing now that when it came out, people just destroyed it. Like, critics destroyed it, hated it. It bombed. It was like this horrible thing for Carpenter's career. And you go back all of a sudden 15, 20 years later, and it's a masterpiece. You know, like everybody can't stop talking about this movie, including critics. Like critics have now, which happens all the time, you know, like, oh, the movie was shitty then, now it's good. But like, if that movie had been a success then as it is now, Carpenter's career would have been something completely different. For better, you know, whether that's a good thing, I don't know. You know, like, maybe we would never have gotten They Live or Prince of Darkness or Big Trouble in Little China, because those are movies that happen when a director isn't sort of fully inside the Hollywood system, you know. But if The Thing had been a blockbuster, and I've heard this before, that Carpenter wanted to be a Hollywood director. Like, he did, like, movies like Starman because he was trying to do different things.
Not the Starman we reviewed.
No, but that one might be bad. I don't like Carpenter's Starman. I think it's boring as fuck. But, you know, The Thing, it's weird, man, because, like, I still think Halloween is Carpenter's best movie. But when I watch The Thing, I'm like, this is Carpenter's best movie. But then when I watch Halloween, I'm like, no, this is Carpenter's best movie. You know what I mean? So, like, I still always go, like, I love Halloween. It just is really, like, because it was so influential on me as a kid. But The Thing is just as good. Really, it really is.
I love it. Yeah, I love it so much.
It's a perfect horror movie.
I actually have... I've seen, I guess you call it the prequel.
Yeah.
I saw it once. I bought it on DVD. It's still in plastic sitting on the shelf. It's not that I hated it. It just wasn't what I wanted. I don't know how to explain it, but I don't want to shit on it because it wasn't that bad.
Right.
But I just don't really want to watch it for a while.
Right.
Because it's not what I want.
It's hard to explain. There's a lot of people sort of petitioning out there to get them to release the original cut of that movie, which was the practical cut, practical effects. Because they shot that entire movie with practical effects and then went back and removed them and put in digital. Did you know that?
No, I didn't. But why would you do that?
That entire movie was shot with practical effects. And then the studio changed it. No one knows what... You can go on YouTube and see scenes of the practical effects. And that entire movie exists in a practical effects cut. Which potentially would have made the movie a lot more watchable.
That's so weird to do.
Yeah, it doesn't make the movie better in terms of any other flaws that were in it, but it makes the movie better in terms of not looking shitty. Because the effects in that movie are weak.
Yeah, they are.
The original effects, 100% without a doubt, are more effective than what we got in 2011, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That shouldn't be the way it is, but that's the way it is.
So. Even the feel of the movie.
Yeah, everything's different.
You're giving me a film that happened before.
Right.
You know, the 1980s version, when did that come out? 2013?
I thought it was 11.
2000, somewhere around
maybe
there?
Maybe it was 13. I don't know. It was something.
But you're telling me this took place before that, right. But it doesn't feel like that.
Right.
It feels like it was made now.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you had the practical effects, it might give it that feel of,
right,
you know, being an 80s movie or earlier.
Right.
So.
Right.
But that was...
All right.
My number one.
Number one is the Psycho remake. No, I'm just joking. That'd be like one of the worst remakes I've ever seen in my entire life, by the way.
And Hayes' Butthole.
Huh?
And Hayes'
Butthole. One of the watch Vince Vaughn jerk off. Yeah, we've talked about this before. it's going to be interesting that what my number one is. My number one is actually 1988's The Blob, which we're going to review later. So I don't want to talk about it too much, but I'm giving away the fact that I like that movie. That's why I wanted to talk about it, and I'm curious to see what your thoughts are on 88's The Blob, but it is by far one of my favorite remakes of all time, and we're going to talk about why, but I think it does exactly what a remake needs to do, and I'll leave it at that, and we'll talk about it more when we get there.
Okay.
All right.
You got some explaining to do. That's going to be a good conversation, so I would stay tuned for part two, because I might have a different view on that movie.
I know, so.
But it's funny, because the one that I told you when I was going through remakes in my head, and I'm like, what did I enjoy? Mm-hmm. You know, what remakes were there?
Oh, yeah, the one you said came to your head.
That was 1994. And the only reason I wrote, I put this down was, I think, the nostalgia from a kid watching it when I was younger and enjoying it. And that was Angels in the Outfield from 1994, right? It came to my head, so I wrote it down.
I didn't even look at anything.
Yeah.
I love that movie when I was a kid.
Yeah, it was so awesome.
Joseph
and a lot of people don't know that was a remake, actually, from like a 1950s movie.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Well, Christopher Lloyd was in it. Right?
Yeah.
So.
Love Angels in the Outfield.
I loved that when I was a kid, yeah. I'd have no idea. I'd probably hate it. I'd probably think it was so dumb. No.
If I watched it now, I'd probably turn it off.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. You never know, though. You might, because you'd seen it, you're like, there's this weird thing that happens where you have that nostalgia, and you're like, I know this is terrible, but at the same time, you watch it because,
they were watching one the other day when I came in the room, and I sat down, and I was watching it. The one where the kid trips on the baseball and gets a super fast arm.
Yeah, Rookie of the Year.
Rookie of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
And I was
that movie's terrible too.
Oh yeah, but I sat down and watched the whole thing.
And you can't help it, right?
Yeah. So
I know. I've seen Rookie of the Year when I was an adult. I know. Yeah. I've had the same experience.
So all right, anything else on this topic?
No, I think we should move on. We got a lot of reviews to get through, so.
All right. What do you want to do first?
I don't know. What you wanna do?
We have Mahakal, Dolly Dearest, or Abby.
Want to go in order? We want to start with the earliest? I don't care. What's that? That would be Abby, I guess.
Abby, yeah.
Yeah, it's what Abby.
So let's run the trailer for Abby 1974.
Was Abby. This was Abby. A woman loved and in love until that night when something evil came looking for a soul to possess.
I can't stop thinking about your husband.
That creep. Forget him.
Was this Abby? Now the fun starts.
Grab her! Hold her! Hear me, demon. Leave this woman's body!
Abby. Rated R.
All right, so that was the trailer for Abby. Now, did you know how much controversy was behind this?
No, I actually did not.
All right, so Abby's the 1974 American blaxploitation horror film. And they say it was a ripoff of The Exorcist.
Yeah.
So the film was a financial success. It grossed $4 million in a month. But was pulled from theaters after the film's distributor, American International Pictures, was accused of copyright violation by Warner Brothers, which saw the film being a direct ripoff of The Exorcist, and filed a lawsuit against AIP. Gridler himself told the Something Journal, "Sure, we made Abby to come in." In the short tale of The Exorcist, the film was also inspired by the 1968's Rosemary's Baby. The film was considered dead until 2004 when a 16mm low-quality copy of Abby was released in DVD. Despite mixed reviews initially, the film has a cult following and is considered by many to be a classic blaxploitation film. So this film was completely dead. They pulled it. They said, not going to happen. You ripped us off. Get rid of it. And it just sat on a shelf somewhere.
I'm surprised. I'm guessing that, first of all, Warner Brothers completely wrong. There's no way that they... I'm guessing that AIP was just like, we're not going to fight Warner Brothers in court, if anything. You know what I mean? There's no way that this movie could ever be considered a direct fucking ripoff of The Exorcist.
Not at all.
It's inspired by The Exorcist. Absolutely. There's no doubt that it's riding on the coattails of that movie's success. There's no doubt that there's certain elements of the movie that it takes. However, this movie, particularly once you get into the third act, is nothing like The Exorcist. It is a completely different movie. So in the same way that what was it? There's been other movies out there that studios have gone after, and you know, they've lost. I can't remember. I don't want to say that because I could be wrong when I say it. But there have been other cases where studios have gone after movies that are clearly riding on the coattails of their success and tried to get these movies to go away, which is weird anyway if you think about it. Why the fuck do they care if Abby does well? The Exorcist made millions and millions of dollars. Why do they care how well Abby does? What does it matter? It's not taking money out of their pocket. It's not at all.
The weird thing is I didn't look any of this part up. This is the same guy who made Grizzly.
Yeah, I know. And Day of the Animals or something.
Right? Yeah. Did they sue him for Grizzly? Because that was definitely a ripoff.
Yeah, that is true.
So I guess it depends on the company who owns that property, really.
Yeah, well, Jaws would have been... Who owns Jaws?
That's Universal.
Universal, right. Yeah, yeah. Universal. No... So, yeah, Abby, so some of the stuff that in the film that definitely rips off The Exorcist. The scene where the priest goes over to, like, I don't know where he goes, Africa or something. And he's in a cave and he releases the demon. That's the same thing that happens in The Exorcist. Father Marin is off in, like, Israel or something and he's in a cave. And he unleashes this demon and it possesses this little girl. So that is a ripoff element. Some of the stuff in the hospital, a little bit, is a ripoff element. Outside of that, like, in this movie, man, Abby, at no point in The Exorcist does Reagan fucking just go nuts and start killing everybody, right? Like...
Yeah, really.
Reagan kills one guy, maybe, and we're not even sure about it. Like, she sort of alludes that she did it, but they don't ever actually let us know for sure.
And she... It's been a long time since I've seen it, but I don't think they really say what type of demon is in her, other than it's just a demon.
No, yeah. I mean, they name it. It's like, what's the name of it?
But Abby goes into detail on what type of demon it is, and it's a demon...
Of sex or something.
Yeah.
Luster, yeah.
So all she wants to do is just fuck every dude she sees. Right. That's the demon.
Which is not The Exorcist.
Like, not at all.
The Exorcist, first of all, the whole thing is that the demon is playing a game with Father Marin and playing a game with, what's his name? The other priest. And being like, you know, pretending that it's the devil and all this other stuff. And the themes in The Exorcist are completely different from anything you get in Abby. And part of me would even question whether or not Warner Brothers even watched that movie, and they just said, we know that this is about this, so we're just going to go after them. And I wish AIP hadn't folded under the pressure, not the company, because the company still continued. Because they were making money, blaxploitation films were still big at that point, right? So of course, like, they were in like a perfect time period for it. And that movie would have had an audience, you know, a lot earlier than it did. Like you said, it did take a long time, because like, Abby was not one that you ever heard about.
No.
It was like you'd read it, see it in a book. You'd be like, oh, Abby. And
that was it.
I could never, like, I remember hearing about Abby, never.
Even still now, I was reading an article when we were planning the show. Last year, the year before, I don't know if you know, Inspector Deck from the Wu-Tang Clan and a group out of Boston, 7L and Esoteric, came out with an album together. On one of their tracks, the first thing you hear on the track is, how do you like my powers now? And then it cuts to some other verses and it goes into the song. I just assumed it was something that they put together. They pulled. I had no idea over the past year and a half or whatever it was that it was from this movie until I watched it. And I'm like, holy shit, I know that from the album.
That's pretty funny.
So that's how gone this movie is, that I had no idea what the hell I was listening to until I watched the film.
Wow.
But some of these numbers are weird. So they have a budget here. Now it says a budget of $100. Inflated figure reports as $472,529.
That sounds...
Sounds a little bit better than $100.
That sounds a bit more realistic, because this movie did have legitimate actors in it. It did use multiple locations. I mean, you're not looking at a movie that's got millions. It wasn't The Exorcist. But it has what's-his-name in it, Austin Stoker, who was in Assault on Precinct 13.
Yeah, and the father was Blackula.
Right, so yeah. You have, you know, a cast of sort of blaxploitation actors.
And this film actually took a long time because Louisiana at the time was just being riddled with tornadoes.
Yeah.
Storms were coming through, so they had to keep stopping production. People were getting sick on set. This whole movie was just a disaster.
Yeah.
And they still found time to put it together. And it also says box office, $4 million, inflated figure reports as $18,901,000.
Yeah, that's accounting. That's in today's money, right? So when they say they're adjusting, I think they're adjusting for today's dollar. So $4 million in 1974, and what would it be today? It's probably 18. That would be my guess. That's, you know.
Yeah, because it just seemed a little... 18 million seems high.
But I can tell you that $100 does not inflate to
$400,000. No, definitely
$100 in 1974 is not $500,000 today. I can guarantee you that.
All right, so you want to get into it?
Yeah, I mean, we've already talked a little bit about it.
I love in the beginning when she's in the shower and it shows the demon start to come towards her. Mm-hmm. And you can totally tell it's just a really big guy with a sheet thrown over him.
Yeah.
It's the awesomest thing ever. Like,
I don't know. Like, that's the stuff that, that's the stuff that to me makes it more ridiculous that anybody would have gone after a movie like this. Cause it's just so. Like that stuff, the scene, like when she's in the fucking, like all the ridiculousness of this movie, like we could run through. Like there's stuff like that. There's a scene where she's in a hospital and she's just like fucking using her powers to like throw people around and escape.
And you can totally tell they're just jumping.
Yeah, like jumping through the air. Like the scene where she
kicks the dude in the dick.
Right, exactly. She kicks the dude in the dick. Just, there's so much of that in this movie. Like great 70s exploitation. Like, fun, you know, this movie isn't scary at all. It's
fun. No.
It's just a good time.
One thing I did really like about it, and it works with any exploitation film like this, mm-hmm. was that every time, so that you knew it was the demon, they had to keep flashing it on the screen.
Oh my God.
They kept, it's the same still pic
every
single time. And at first, I'm like, that's going to get annoying. And then the more it happened, the more I was like, that's actually pretty cool.
They did a little bit of that in The Exorcist, like a little bit where they would do a sudden flash of, if I remember, I'm pretty sure it's the first movie that they do it, where they do a sudden flash of the demon, like a demon face whatever.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing that Abby was like, we're going to do that, but we're going to do it like five times more often. We're just going to do it all the time.
They did pull a Exorcist line, though. I don't know if you noticed.
Which one?
When she throws her husband down in the bed and she goes, fuck me.
Yeah, fuck me. Absolutely, yeah. Fuck me.
That
fuck
was
me.
Definitely.
I mean, but The Exorcist, you know.
Sue
like,
him for that, not the rest of the movie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You're like, give us 20 bucks.
I don't think
bucks.
You can copyright the phrase, fuck me.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that porn had already kind of taken that phrase.
Maybe.
Most likely by that point. Because hardcore porn was certainly around.
Not only that, we'll get to the end of the movie. They're in a bar. And she just comes in, and that's where the line comes from. What do you think of my powers now?
Yeah.
And she just starts doing the same thing in a hospital, just basically throws her hands towards him, and they just jump backwards.
That's funny.
So awesome. Then they do a full exorcism. This is the only movie I've ever seen an exorcism in a bar.
Oh, God, yeah. I did not expect this movie to end in the bar.
No.
Like, I was sure, positive. I'm like, hey, this is an Exorcist ripoff. Like, in my head, I'm like, it's an Exorcist ripoff. She's going to go back to the house at some point, and they're going to do this in the bedroom. Because they're going to do a callback to The Exorcist in that way. They have a house, they have a bedroom. Like, I'm in my head, I'm like, that's where this movie's going to end. Fuck no, this movie ends in a bar. And they just hold her down, and the exorcism at lasts for like, what?
It's got to be a good 8 minutes,
yeah,
10 minutes.
It's,
the whole bar scene has got to be a good 15
goes
minutes.
Goes on for a long
time. Yeah, they're there for a while.
That's why I said I was surprised that this movie ended in the bar. I did not expect it to happen that way.
I'm not an exorcist specialist, but what was the purpose when the father's like, grab her and keep her arms straight out?
I don't know.
Does it do anything?
No, because in my mind, I figure she still has her powers. Why does that make her all of a sudden...
Oh, no, because she kept seeing the cross, I think.
Is that what was doing it?
He pulled the cross out, which was making her lose her powers.
All right, I guess that.
Because they made a big deal of that cross in the beginning when he first got it.
That's right.
Because I was thinking, why can't they just use any cross? But they made a big deal about that specific one.
Yeah, you're right. I guess that makes sense then. So, I don't know why that. I don't know.
Now, let me ask you this. So, your wife or girlfriend, whatever you have, gets possessed by a demon.
Right.
And she goes out and just fucks a bunch of dudes.
Yeah.
Once the demon's out of her, you take her back. She had a lot of cock.
Yeah, I know. She's like, I had a demon in me. Like, you had more than a demon inside you. You
know? Oh, yeah. That's a tough one. I was thinking of that while I was watching it.
That's hard, man. Like, that's a tough one. I mean, she killed the dudes that she fucked, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, at least...
So, you're never going to see those guys again.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, as long as she doesn't end up, like, with some disease or something.
Yeah, you got to get her tested.
Yeah, you got to get her tested and all that stuff. Yeah, I mean, what are you going to do, right? What are you going to do?
I don't know. They live happily ever after.
They do. He's perfectly all right with it. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe he didn't know she fucked all those guys. Did he know?
Oh, yeah, actually, that's a good question. I don't know if he knows.
And if she was, like, possessed, she probably wouldn't even remember doing it. Like, in The Exorcist, Reagan never remembered anything she did.
I didn't think of it that way.
So maybe, like, everything she did, nobody knows that she fucked all those guys.
Yeah, but they find him dead. Are they just dead?
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that they know she fucked him, right?
Wouldn't their pants still be down with boners and stuff?
How long does a boner last? I mean, in Clerks, it lasts for a while, right? Because the chick fucks a dead dude in the bathroom.
Yeah.
So I guess. But
so she has sex with him and then kills him. So when they show up, they're still going to have their pants down. I mean.
True. I don't know.
All right, we're getting a little deep with Abby here. Just but go watch it because it's a kick-ass movie.
I don't think you could be like. No. If anything, you're gonna leave her because she fucking, like, beat the shit out of you and stuff, and you're probably terrified of her. You know what I mean?
You know what someone should do with
this? Anytime she gets in the mood, you're gonna be like, is this bitch possessed again? You know what I mean? Like, anytime she's like, oh, come on, baby, you're gonna be like, wait, is she her, or is she, like, this demon back, you know? That would be my concern.
What they should do is take, the end of the movie when they're getting ready to go on their little trip, and he turns around and he says something to the in-laws or whatever they were.
Yeah.
You know the scene in Clerks when O'Halloran's like, my girl, she sucked 37 dicks.
Yeah.
Just put that when he turns around, just have it say that. And then the movie just ends.
In a row?
Yeah, in a row.
It's like one of the greatest jokes in that movie.
Oh, yeah.
My girlfriend sucked 37 dicks in a row? but anyway, we digress. No, man, I dug it. I mean, I thought it was fun. You know, I'll never, ever, ever choose this over The Exorcist. Like, sometimes you'd be like, oh, I'll watch Piranha instead of Jaws. You know, like, oh, I'll watch. Doesn't mean it's a better movie. But you'd be like, I would definitely, like, take that one just for a different mood. I probably, if I want to watch a possession movie, I'm still going to go with The Exorcist because it's one of my favorites. But I think it's for, like, a blaxploitation, low budget, William Girdler film from the 70s. It's an enjoyable movie. You know, and that's kind of enough.
Yeah, it depends on what your mood is. I mean, if you're looking for, I want to get a little scared. I mean, if The Exorcist does that to you,
right?
You know,
it used to
turn the lights down low, that type of thing. But if you're just like, I want to laugh a little bit and still watch some sort of a horror genre, I guess you could say.
Yeah,
this is a good film.
If you're into blaxploitation, then this is kind of a must see. Just to sort of complete that out. There's a lot worse you could do by blaxploitation.
Yeah, sure. That's why I was surprised we found it on the Roku there. I was pretty happy about watching all the ones that I found online, because that was really the only way I could find this.
Yeah.
It is actually on a double feature with something else.
But is it one of those real expensive ones?
It was like $20. It's
not
bad.
It's not that bad.
But every time I tried to find it online, it was just a shitty copy.
Yeah.
And I was glad we found it on a Roku there.
Yeah, not bad. I mean, I've been wanting to see it, so I'm kind of glad you chose it. So
yeah.
All right. Next two, we'll see.
Yeah.
I've seen both of those before you chose them.
You want to do... Is Dolly Dearest next?
Let's do Dolly Dearest.
All right, here's trailer for the rip-off...
Child's Play?
Yeah, Child's Play, Dolly Dearest.
This is the doll your daddy's gonna make in Mexico. And this is the factory where we're gonna make her and sew her little dresses. Isn't she beautiful?
May I have one, Daddy?
From the moment they met,
I'm gonna love her so much.
It was a fairy tale come true.
Good night, Dolly.
Sweet dreams, Dolly.
But this is where the fairy tale ends and the nightmare begins.
Dolly? Dolly?
Why do they always gotta have that? Someone's always got time in the middle of murders to come up with some fucking line.
In Child's Play at the end or near the end when Andy burns Chucky, Chucky's like, Andy, I thought we were friends at the end. And Andy's like, this is the end, friend. And he throws the match in.
Yeah.
You're like, he would never. He'd be like, stop talking, you fucking doll, and throw the match. You know what I mean? Like, you wouldn't even let the doll say anything. Like, you definitely wouldn't stop for a one-liner. Like, never.
I know. I might want to hear him out.
Maybe
he feels bad about what he did.
Yeah.
You know, we'll talk it out.
And you ever see the movie Hot Fuzz?
Yeah.
I love, love, love that movie. And, like, there's these great scenes in it, like, where Nick Frost's character is because he loves action movies and he's a cop. So it's like this whole thing where, like, he wants to be, you know, Bruce Willis or something, and he's constantly stopping on purpose to deliver one-liners before he does shit, and it's amazing.
Yeah.
Like, that's so self-aware. Something like this thinks that kid... I feel kind of bad for that kid because that kid thinks he's really badass at the time. Like, when he makes the movie, he's like, I get to shoot the doll. I get to say the awesome line with the bad word in it. I'm going to be cool. And then in 2015... this trailer's on YouTube, and we can all watch it and laugh at him because it's really fucking stupid. You know what I mean? Like, there's a point where this guy, assuming he's still alive, has got to fucking hate that his line, his moment, made it in the trailer.
Now,
for Dolly Dearest.
I'm trying to think back. That was a musket that she pulled off the wall, right?
Maybe. What did she load it with? Did she load it with musket balls?
I don't know, but it's like a flint gun, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I wasn't paying that.
Don't you got to like pack those things?
That's
like,
what I'm saying.
Like, you don't just throw shells.
No,
in
yeah,
it.
I'm saying you have to pack it with the musket balls, right? You got to put them in, and then like put the fucking thing in, and like jam it down, and then.
So they just have that already set on the wall, already packed and ready to go.
I didn't even notice what it was. I thought it was a shotgun. So.
Yeah, because I don't even think that they pull, because those there, you got to like pull the hammer back.
Yeah, honestly.
So when you pull the trigger, it hits the flint, and then that is what ignites the ball out.
I honestly thought it was a shotgun. I do have an interesting history with Dolly Dearest, though, because I saw it back when it came out on video in the early 90s, and I was 8, 9 years old, and I loved it when I was a kid. And, like, I watched it a lot. I was obsessed with the Child's Play series. I think I've talked about this on the show before, as far as my Child's Play obsession. But I was obsessed. I then became obsessed. In the same way I became obsessed with the ripoffs of Gremlins, I became obsessed with ripoffs of Child's Play for the same reason. I love Child's Play 1 and 2. So movies like Dolly Dearest and Puppet Master and Demonic Toys and Dolls. And all Dolls wasn't a ripoff of Child's Play. But like anything with killer dolls became like an obsession. I absolutely loved everything and anything. So Dolly Dearest, I loved.
All three of these were a first time watch for me.
No. Okay, so it's interesting. Because here's a perfect example where nostalgia does absolutely nothing for me. I hate this movie.
You don't even like Rip Torn?
Well, Rip Torn, he's
a young
maybe.
Not playing a drunk, not playing an
ass.
Yeah,
but he's drunk in this movie.
Oh, he's definitely.
There's no way he's sober. Yeah. You heard about how he got arrested, right, in Connecticut?
Yeah, well, he lives in Sharon.
Yeah, you heard what he did. You remember what he
did? Yeah, he robbed a bank.
Yeah.
Well, not technically.
He got drunk
the bank,
in the middle of the night, but for whatever reason, took a handgun, crawled into the window of a bank, and got caught. And the thing that blows my mind is that, of course, like, If you did that or I did that, we'd be sitting in a fucking jail cell for 10 years for armed robbery.
Oh, hell yeah.
This dude goes to rehab for like a month and he's okay. He's done.
Like, oh, he was drunk.
That dude has been arrested so many times and not once has that dude had to spend any time in jail.
Well, he got so many DUIs. Tons of them.
An insane amount of DUIs.
And he just gets off every time.
And every time you see him in a movie, he's drunk. You ever see Summer Rental?
Yeah.
He's drunk in that movie. He plays a drunk in that movie.
The hell am I thinking of? Not Dodgeball.
Right, Dodgeball, He's so good in that.
But he was drunk. They were like, we're going to put you in a wheelchair.
Yeah, because he can't walk.
We can't let you walk. Right, you're going to get hurt.
Rip Torn. Yeah, okay, I'll give you that. And I like Denise Crosby. I mentioned when we did the Eliminators episode that I like Denise Crosby. I think this is like a big, big slide down for her from Pet Sematary.
She's actually a lot better in this, though, I think.
Than Pet Sematary, you're saying? Or the Eliminators?
No, of Eliminators.
I mean... Sure, she's been acting longer, but I like watching her better in The Eliminators.
I love how the premise of the movie is father is a doll maker. He buys a doll store or a doll manufacturing.
Sight unseen, by the way.
Sight unseen. Over the phone.
He buys a fucking factory over the phone.
Now, if he only knew in another 20 years there was going to be the internet and he could have went on there and saw pictures of this place.
Right.
Like Google Earth it or something.
Do something. Or... take a trip down there. Like,
spend
a little bit. Spending the money to buy a factory. Spend, you know, a couple thousand dollars, whatever it's going to cost you. Fly down there. Spend one night. Look at it. And then you'll be better informed about whether or not you should buy it. You wouldn't buy a fucking house without looking at it first.
Even if you go down for you go for a day.
Right.
The first thing you see is some drunk dude with a shovel out back digging a hole in the wall.
Right?
And then you're going to see this weird Mexican guy
right.
who completely lied to you.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these creepy dolls that are just sitting there for no apparent reason.
The other thing about the creepy dolls is he's like, these are amazing. Everybody's going to want one of these. I'm like, what?
Who the fuck's going to want that?
Nobody wants them. Your stupid, weird fucking kid wants one. Your kid's fucking weird. I mean, like, the normal kids aren't going to want this doll. All
right, so I just jotted on some stuff while I was watching this. What do you think of the doll's mechanics in this?
Very impressive, for sure.
You think so?
No.
So I'm trying. It's funny because I'm watching this and I'm going, I'm so trying to compare this to Chucky.
Well, you have to, right? That's the influence.
And I'm going, wow, what a piece of shit this
and
looks
like. And
wasn't
Child's Play 2 out at this point?
Yeah, 2 or 3 had to be out by this
3
point.
3 came out later. I know 3 wasn't out yet. 2 came out in 91 or 90. The effects in Child's Play 2 are so good. Like, so good and so amazing. And what Kevin Yeager did in that movie is mind-blowing to a fact. Like, you watch it today and you're like, wow, this is really good. Like, what they did with the movements of the doll in that movie is really, really good.
Right down to the facial expressions of the doll.
Because he did this whole thing where, like, he could make it mimic his movement. You know, like, he did that whole thing. This movie, it's like a head on a stick and they, like, turn it. You know, it's like...
There were a few scenes where I actually... I'm watching this, right? I actually stop it and rewind it about 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what the fuck was that? I'm like, that's got to be a person in a suit. Like, there's no way that's a mechanical thing. Mm-hmm. And it happens like 3 or 4 times, and I am just laughing at this point. I'm like, this is fucking hilarious. Right. So I go and look it up, and sure enough, it's a midget in a suit.
Yeah, I mean, they did do that in the first Child's Play movie.
It's pretty sad when you use a real person and it looks that bad.
Yeah, true. I mean, they did do it in the first Child's Play movie, and like, I think that today it's laughable, but I think back in the day, it wasn't. I feel like when that movie came out, it worked. I feel like, but at least that still had really good doll effects, you know? This movie, it's going to have little people running around, but the doll effects aren't good either. You know what I mean? So it makes it that much worse. Like, you'd be better off having somebody just fucking a human being play the doll the whole time.
And I was trying to, I actually at one point put myself into this movie, and I'm going, see your comment on this. If that doll ever talked, I would fucking laugh at it.
Yeah.
That voice is so horrendous.
Oh, my God, it's bad. It's bad.
God, is it bad? I would laugh at the doll and just let the doll kick my ass.
I don't understand what they were thinking. I don't know what they were thinking. What? Why? First of all, what was the thought? Like, I get that it's a demon. Okay, so, but why make it sound like, try to make it like sound like the demon from The Exorcist? Like, that's what they were doing.
Yeah, at first yep, I'm like,
right.
I'm like, is that Tony Todd?
Yeah, right. Like in Child's Play, they just used Brad Dourif's voice when mm-hmm. he was Chucky. He could mimic the doll. You know, yeah. Like he could do the high good guy doll. But then they just used like a normal guy's voice. Like that was almost, it feels better for some reason than watching somebody go like, hi, you know, that's what this fucking movie, yeah. It's like, it sounds like a cat, like when cats are mating and they're out in the yard and they're like, yeah. You know what I'm talking about? When they screech and shit. That's what this doll sounds like when it's talking. And it's not scary. It's not even funny. Like, I wish it were funnier.
You know what the funniest part was? Trying to get me to believe that Rip Torrance an archaeologist.
Yeah. Not for a second did I believe that. And he was, that he was a respected scholar. No way. Not for a fucking second. What I did believe is our Rip Torn would take a fucking child, take him on as his assistant, and put him in dangerous situations. That I believe, because I think Rip Torn would easily have taken an 8-year-old and forced him through the window of the bank with a gun.
Yeah, exactly.
That I believe. But not for a second do I buy Rip Torn as a fucking recognized and respected archaeologist.
And never. What was with the whole supernatural thing? I didn't even get...
That's the thing is, like, this movie had, it was like two things. It was The Exorcist and it was Child's Play. There's a lot of The Exorcist in here.
But the whole time, like, towards the end when they have that creative setup and guy's running and get stabbed with the scissors.
Right.
Why don't they just use their supernatural powers? They had powers throughout the whole movie. Now all of a sudden they got to stab people with scissors.
And what is the thing with the demon? Like, there's only one demon, right? But it possesses every single doll.
Yeah, I didn't get that either.
Like, there's just too many things in this movie. Like, they're trying to do too much and rip off too much. They want to be Child's Play because Child's Play is so popular, so they bring in this whole element of the doll talks to the kid and only the kid and no one else believes the kid. But then the kid starts to get possessed, so it's basically like an Exorcist ripoff. And then all of a sudden all the dolls are alive because they need to make it bigger than Child's Play for some reason. So you can't just have one doll. You need to have, you know, 20. And it's just, they're doing so many things that none of it ever really works right. It just comes off as, like, when's it going to end at some point? There's moments in it that are kind of fun, but there's a lot more moments where I'm just like, this has been done way too many other times in better movies, including in better ripoffs.
Another thing I found funny was the doll made the little girl cut her hair.
Right.
But before that, through the whole movie, she basically had it all pulled back so you couldn't see really what her hair looked like. Yeah. So all they did was take it out of the ponytail, give her some bangs, and we're like, there's your hairdo. Like,
yeah.
There's so many things about this where I was just, I wish I was watching it with somebody else.
Maybe that would help.
Yeah.
Maybe. There's a reason this thing does not have like any real like Blu-ray release or anything, because nobody cares about it.
Scream Factory would be pulling the shit out soon.
I don't even know. Somebody just put on, like, Instagram picture, like, oh, my mail haul today. And they had, like, a bunch of stuff. And then, like, the fucking 100 limited edition box VHS of Dolly Dearest, right? So, it's like, they're like, all right, sweet. I got, you know, my, and somebody's like, Dolly Dearest sucks. Like, just underneath it. And it's just like, I kind of like it. And I'm like, no, you don't. You don't like this movie. You mm-hmm. are lying because there's nothing... You just don't want to feel like a fucking idiot for dropping however many dollars on your 100 limited edition VHS copy of Dolly. I can go down to the fucking thrift store and buy a fucking VHS copy of Dolly Dearest for 10 cents that nobody wants. I'm not dropping any money on no limited edition of this piece of shit.
No.
I wouldn't buy a Scream Factory version of it. There's no way I'm going to watch this movie unless you make me watch it for a podcast.
Hey, who's ever out there that bought this limited edition? It's on YouTube for free.
And it was on Netflix for a long time.
I just watched it on YouTube.
It's not on there now. But
and
it
now,
was.
Okay, so the ending. Maybe you could clear this up for me. What the fuck happened?
I don't know.
So they ran around. They placed some C4 or dynamite.
Right.
They blow the fucking building up.
Right.
How does that stop a demon?
It doesn't.
Wouldn't the demon just leave the body of the doll and just go to something else? Or
yeah, which is what I thought was going
to
happen.
And whatever happened to the original doll? Where'd that thing go?
The kid fucking blew it away with a gun. Like, that's
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Think, like, first of all, that should be the end of the movie, right? The whole movie is about this one doll, right? The fucking leader doll is the first one to go. Like, the doll that we've spent the entire movie with, that we've watched evolve, that we've watched, like, transform this little girl, gets blown away by the little fucking kid, and then there's still, like, 15 minutes of movie about other dolls.
Yeah.
Why isn't that doll the center of the entire finale?
So all these dolls, I guess, aren't being controlled by the original doll, because once that doll dies...
They're not. That's what I'm saying.
They're still alive.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
So this little bitch is out running around, having fun, playing house, and all. If we were dolls and we were... I'd be like, yo, Adam.
Right.
What the fuck are we doing?
Yeah.
Like, she's out playing house and stuff, and we're just stuck inside of a double-wide trailer?
Right.
With Rip Torn running in and out every once in a while?
Right.
Being all drunk and shit?
Right, yeah.
Let's get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, that's true. You'd get out, right?
Want pizza?
And so if this demon thing can inhabit this, like you said, it's not like there's a leader doll that has to be alive in order for the others to be alive, right? All of them
are obviously independent.
Why can't that demon possess every single doll in the world at the same time?
Silence.
Right?
I don't have an answer. I don't know.
It can, right? Yeah. Is there any reason why it can't? No. There's no reason, because we're never given any explanation as to why it inhabits only these dolls. Right? Why the one that we thought was like the head doll has no significance to the finale. So theoretically, this demon, like, and it goes back to your point, should be able to just have possessed whatever the fuck it wants to possess, whenever the fuck it wants to possess it, and it shouldn't matter what you do. It shouldn't matter if you blow up anything. Unless I miss some exposition from Rip Torn, which is possible, because he was clearly drunk and hard to understand. I never heard anybody explain why this thing was confined to this warehouse, you know?
Not only that, how is it that Rip Torn, he can't fit through the hole in that cave, but the hole that he fit through at the bank was a lot smaller?
That's why I'm saying. I'm surprised he didn't need a little kid to fit through that window at the bank, because he couldn't fit through that hole, so he must have needed a kid. He must have had an accomplice at the bank. He hired one.
We're comparing like real life scenario to a stupid movie.
He hired one of the little people that were on a set of Dolly Dairies. He calls him up in a drunken stupor that night, and he's like, well, let's just say like the name of the little person is Frank, and he's like, hey Frank, you know, like, it's Rip. Remember when we worked on Dolly Dairies together?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're still little, right? Like,
yeah,
you haven't
gotten
any
taller? Yeah, I haven't grown at all.
You want to help me rob a bank?
Well,
I really need someone that's small. You remember that scene in
the movie? Yeah, I'm small.
Where there was that hole and I had to force a little kid through it.
Well,
we're going to do that. We're going to basically do that again, but at a bank.
Okay.
And you're going to have a gun.
All right. A gun?
Yeah, a gun.
Okay.
Don't worry about the gun. And then you're going to help me get into the bank.
Okay, I'm going to just through the front door?
No, through window, because you're a midget. Oh, sorry, not midget, little person. I don't want to offend.
No, it's okay.
Ugh, sorry, I don't want to offend you or anything, but you're a little person, and you could fit into small spaces because you're almost magical. So maybe you could fly or like...
Well, I'm not a leprechaun, but...
You have pot gold?
No, but I definitely could fit through a window.
All right, so that's what we're going to... You meet me up in like Litchfield area, maybe? You know,
okay.
Litchfield. I know you're in like California, but maybe if you could just like fly, since you are magical, like maybe you could just crawl across the rainbow or something and then come in.
Sure.
All right, good.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. See you then.
Like that's what.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, God.
Anyway. I got nothing else to say.
Me neither. That fucking movie sucks so bad. Fucking picking that shit for.
All right, so let's just go on to a movie that I can't.
All right, so I'm just going to play a quick insert musical. This movie is actually subtitled, so there's no, even if I played the trailer, you have no idea what it's saying.
We'll just say that it's a Bollywood ripoff of A Nightmare on Elm Street called Mahakal.
Yeah.
And here's a musical number from that film. Can't help but dance. Nothing makes me think of like pedophiles and child murderers like this.
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing.
Yeah, light that smoke up. Yeah.
Okay, ready? Here's where it kicks in.
That guy thinks he's so cool.
He is cool.
Oh my god, he's got that top hat. He does that whole look where he looks up with his eyes from the hat.
That's the rapist guy. Well, no, he's not a rapist. He sprayed it with a hose.
Yeah.
Like a literal thing. He's like, I'm going to spray you with a hose. And you're like, oh, that's an innuendo. And he sprays her with a hose.
Yeah. Guy's getting a little jealous over here. He's like, hell yeah, buddy.
Guy, right?
Yeah. He's got like two outfits in the whole movie. What the fuck is that? I didn't even notice that before.
It's like a disco ball.
It looks like a cop light.
Yeah, well, it looks
there he goes.
It looks like a dreidel, actually.
Alright.
you don't want to keep going? No, it's 5 minutes
long.
Oh,
it's five. Yeah, it's like 5 minutes.
We'll play the whole song at the end for you. How's that sound?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. We'll hook you up at the end there.
Yeah, we'll make sure you get the whole version of that song.
Yeah. So, Mahakal.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry about that.
Where do you start?
God, I don't even know where to start. So, when I watched this, because this was the first time,
mm-hmm.
I posted a picture of it on Instagram,
mm-hmm.
and my thought was, Freddy Krueger meets Grease.
Yeah, I saw the post at that.
Yeah. It
yeah, I
legitimately
mean...
goes right from the beginning to a dream sequence. With a guy with a claw, just like Freddy.
Right.
With a really shitty Freddy look on him.
Right.
And then it immediately goes to like musical numbers.
Yep.
They just start dancing and singing and shit. They're just really happy people who are about to die.
This is Bollywood. So it's an interesting thing because this is the only Bollywood movie I've ever seen. I actually saw this back in May. I was doing this thing on Letterboxd. They just called a challenge and you had to watch 30 movies, all different types of movies, and one of them was to watch a Bollywood movie. So I was like, all right, if I'm going to watch a Bollywood movie, I'm going to find a Bollywood horror movie. And that's when all of a sudden I realized there is a slew of Bollywood ripoffs of horror movies. There's a Child's Play too.
Uh-huh.
About like I couldn't find that one, so I watched this instead. So I watched Mahakal, and then like 2 months later, you're like, I think I want to watch this movie, Mahakal. I'm like, you're fucking kidding. Like, I just watched this movie 2 months ago. I'm like, all right, but, you know. And the weird thing about this movie is that somewhere inside of it is like a really cheesy kind of fun ripoff of Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
Like, it's in there. There's a movie in there that I want to watch over and over again. I just don't want to watch this movie over and over again. And part of the movie is that, or part of the thing is that it's so goddamn long. It's like 2 hours. What is it? Like 2 hours and 12 minutes?
2 hours and 12 minutes?
It's fucking long.
Yeah.
Nightmare on Elm Street was like an hour and 20 something minutes. So you means they've added almost an hour in musical numbers, in slapstick, in like, I don't even know, weird shit, like where guys are fighting in the middle of a field.
Yeah, there's a little kung fu in this too. Because there's that scene where the chick is attempting to be raped, I guess. I don't even know what the fuck
is going
on.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. He's like, I'm going to spray you down. So in my thing, I'm like, he's going to give her like a facial? Like, what is he going to, are they going to bukkake her in the middle of the field? You know? But then he literally gets a hose and sprays her.
And then there's these two dudes that run out of nowhere.
Right.
Like, they weren't even anywhere on screen.
Right.
They just jump over bushes and just start doing some crazy kung fu
there's
shit.
There's a few fight scenes in this movie.
Yeah.
And this is what I'm thinking. I don't know anything about Bollywood, so I am purely making guesses. But this is what I think. The Ramsey brothers who made this movie are really well-known Bollywood directors. They've directed a lot of stuff. They actually break the fourth wall in this movie at one point where the Michael Jackson guy says, the Ramsey brothers just offered me a part in their new movie. blah, 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 blah. And it's like, this, it's an obviously a joke alluding to the fact that this guy is in a Ramsey Brothers movie already. But I think that what happens is you have, you know, a Bollywood, say Bollywood director, and they say, okay, well, we want to rip off A Nightmare on Elm Street, right? Because that movie's really successful. That franchise is really successful. Granted, we're ripping it off well after the franchise has fallen out of success. So it's bizarre because they're ripping it off in like 91.
Yeah,
this is like,
91, 92.
And they take some stuff from like parts 3 and 4 too. Like they rip off a few things from different Nightmare movies. But they're like, it's a Bollywood movie, so we have to have all this other stuff. So we're going to take a script, like a Nightmare on Elm Street script, and then what we're going to do is we're going to have to add in a bunch of musical numbers, right? We're going to have fighting scenes. I'm just guessing because this is the shit that doesn't make sense. So it must have been a requirement for it to be Bollywood. Singing, fighting, really weird, like sensual but not sexual, like very weird, like almost teasing type stuff, like...
I don't think they can show nudity.
Right. Yeah. But, like, they want to really, really badly. And that's the thing. Like, they want to make a horror movie, but it's almost like they can't. So they have to have all this. They want to show nudity, but they can't. So then they try to push it as far as they can, but still make it fall within the guidelines of a Bollywood movie. But I'm just guessing.
I've seen two other Bollywood movies
Jesus
other than this
Christ.
One. I watched one on YouTube. It was a horror movie. I didn't know it was a Bollywood movie going into it.
And you watched it anyway. Once you discovered it was in the first minute, you were like, because it's not like it takes a half an hour in and you're like, wait, is this a Bollywood movie? Like you're watching
like,
it.
I have
like,
no idea what they're
you're
saying.
You're watching it for 30 seconds and you're like, oh, it's a Bollywood movie. And then you're like, I'm going to stay with this. And I know it's going to be really long and filled with musical numbers, but I think I'm going to stick it out because it might be good.
I want to say that one was like an hour and 40.
That's not bad.
It wasn't too bad. And it was a horror movie. And yeah, it's weird because in between all the horror stuff, they're like dancing in their living room. Like one, like I remember this chick was dancing with a broom.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
It makes no sense. And then the other one was like, I guess you could say an American Bollywood. I didn't really watch the whole thing. The old lady was watching it, and I was just kind of in and out of it.
Was it Slumdog Millionaire or anything? I've seen that, but that's not really Bollywood. But it ends with a Bollywood scene.
It was some love story, but it was all in English. But it was all, you know, Middle Eastern people that were in it. So I don't remember what it was, but... And there was a lot of musical numbers in that, too. So it just must be a musical thing. I don't know.
Oh, it is. Bollywood, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think it's a thing. Like, for a Bollywood movie, it has to have certain elements. And I'm just guessing, but I think it's musical dance numbers. And I guessed kung fu fighting type stuff because this movie has random fighting in it. So I'm guessing every Bollywood movie does. But I don't know.
So here's my question right in the beginning of the movie. Right in the very beginning, you get the dream sequence, and then it goes right into... That guy walking down the hallway smacks the girl in the ass that was putting the picture up.
Right.
Maybe something got lost in translation. He smacks her on the ass. They flirt with each other. He's trying to fuck her.
Mm-hmm.
She won't have none of it.
Mm-hmm.
Then they both go into this other room because this lady's calling him.
Mm-hmm.
She says mom and dad, and he calls them aunt and uncle.
That is an Indian thing. So auntie is what you call, like, and I don't know if it's necessary. I don't want to, like, say for sure. I don't know 100%, but they use that terminology for an older, like, a mother and a father that aren't your mother and father. So, like, your girlfriend's mother, you would call her auntie. That's actually, like, an Indian thing. So that's a cultural thing.
Okay.
It is. I'm 100% sure about that.
That's just really weird because coming from, say, for us.
It's different, right?
Do you know how many people are going? Man, you know Indians do it with their own family? Because I was like, what the fuck is going on? So the whole movie, I'm trying to figure out, are they really related?
Yeah, no, they're not. That's a cultural thing. Yes.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that.
It is
I had
lost
no
in
idea.
Translation in a way. You're right. Because it wouldn't necessarily, you wouldn't know that. I just happened, for whatever reason, to know that. Another random thing that I know.
So yeah, we get the cool Michael Jackson scene in this. Guy just moonwalks into, I don't know what it is, like a dive bar or something.
I thought it was like a cafeteria.
Out.
Didn't he work there?
Oh, maybe that's what it was, yeah. I don't know, it was like weird looking restaurant thing.
Yeah, and then they break out into like a random dance, and he's got like, that's a scene where he addresses the audience. He looks right into the camera and says, I just got a part in the newest Ramsey Brothers movie, which Mahakal is a Ramsey Brothers movie. So it's really a bizarre scene, and one of the only times that they break the fourth wall. there's a few times where like he mugs at the camera and shit. Like he does, he plays like four characters in this movie.
Yeah, he does.
He plays all of his brothers.
Yeah, because he plays that goofy guy with the weird teeth.
Yeah, he plays the guy with the umbrella that shows up later.
Yeah. And the guy's like, are you my twin?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
And then they start arguing.
That guy, man, he must be like some sort of like well-known Bollywood guy.
Oh, maybe.
I'm guessing he is. Like that he was known for something, like as a Michael Jackson impersonator or something. Because he has no reason to be in that movie at all.
No, other than just entertainment.
Yeah, and that's why I feel like he was there for that reason. Like he was put in there as the cameo in a way, but on a larger scale. Like that's kind of how I viewed that guy, knowing nothing, because I didn't bother to actually look and see what that was true or not. But I'm just making assumptions because I'm trying to make sense in my head of why he's there. You know, now there is. Hang on, let me drink. My throat's getting really dry. I will say there's one scene in this movie, one scene that it is a ripoff of Nightmare on Elm Street.
There's a couple, actually.
Well, one scene for me. No, I'm saying there's a couple ripoffs of Nightmare on Elm Street. There's one scene in particular that actually works. One. And it's the scene where she's in the school.
Yeah.
And the body gets dragged down a hall, and they do like an Evil Dead 2, Evil Dead type ripoff where the girl shows up with the white eyes, and she's kind of like doing the Evil Dead demon.
She's like floating towards her and
that's
shit.
That's very
yeah.
Evil Dead, right?
Yeah.
That scene is, at least from like what I'm remembering, is the only scene that works as like a legitimate, like, oh, that could actually be a kind of creepy. You know, like the scene where they drag the body, which of course is taken right out of Nightmare on Elm Street in the hallway and the body bag and all that.
Mm hmm.
And then the rest isn't really, but that scene, I was like, this is actually, because it wasn't silly anymore. It was a horror movie at that point. Yeah. They weren't going for laughs. They weren't going for, like, lighthearted fucking weird-ass dance numbers and shit. They were just, you know.
They also have the girl in the white dress.
Right.
They also have the scene with the chick in the waterbed.
Right, which is from part 3 or 4.
But she's not naked in this.
Right.
She's wearing, like, a full-length, yeah. Right.
No, a Nightmare on Elm Street. It was 3 or 4 with a waterbed. Which one? It was 4. It was 4. Yeah. Pretty sure.
Yep.
And she was fully topless in that.
Yeah, and really, Mahakal doesn't do anything Freddy does. He just runs a lot.
Yeah.
Just runs.
And they toned down his backstory. Like, in Nightmare on Elm Street, he was a pedophile, child murderer type. In this, he just, like, sacrifices kids to some god. And the weird thing is that he always looked like that, right?
I doesn't guess, look, yeah.
Like, it's not, he doesn't get burned or anything. He just gets buried alive.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing. And it also takes from Nightmare on Elm Street 2 because he actually possesses the girl and, like, forces her to go and, like, you know, remember, like, when she's in the club, that scene we played.
Oh, yeah.
She's possessed by him. And Nightmare on Elm Street 2, Freddy possesses the guy and, like, you know, forces him to go out and do weird stuff, like go to gay bars and stuff.
Yeah.
So I felt like that was taking from part 2. It takes from a lot of different Nightmare on Elm Street movies. But in the end, man, it's just too long.
Too long and...
It's too
long. Oh, God, if you... Maybe if you cut some of the dance numbers out. Maybe.
Maybe. And you know what? But
it's still kind of boring.
The thing is, like, I don't even think that it's... I almost feel like the dance numbers would add to, like, the fucking... Like, the ridiculous fun of it. I feel like... As it gets to, like, that hour and 40-minute mark, it just gets tedious. There's just too much. Like, they should have cut out all that stuff where she's possessed. All of that should go.
Yeah.
Like, really, like, that's a big chunk of the last part of the movie where she gets taken over by him and she's, like, running around doing shit. And then that kind of gets thrown away. And then, like, she randomly gets pulled into, like... I don't even know. It's not even like a dream world anymore because you don't even need to be asleep because he can just come into the real world and he pulls her.
Yeah, I didn't get that.
And they just kind of give up on all the rules just to get to the end. And then they have that final scene in the dungeon, which does have some pretty good like impalement scenes and stuff. I'll give them that too.
The score is...
Did you notice? Did you recognize it?
Yeah. It's just like Nightmare on Elm Street.
Well, okay, so you've got the Nightmare on Elm Street Rick Ross is like... It's like they change it instead of like a... Like Nightmare on Elm Street's like doo 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 doo.
Yeah.
This is like doo doo doo. You know what I mean? Like they changed the note
very
like
slightly.
Yeah. But at the end, if you go back and watch the end, the scene where they crush it, like where he's trying to get her and she's behind the bars and shit, that's the music they use in Night of the Living Dead. And at least in the opening scene when Barbara is being chased in, when she's in the car and stuff, it's the same exact music.
Oh, I didn't catch that.
But I don't know where that music came from in Night of the Living Dead and whether or not that was like open source type public domain music or not. But it's the same exact music.
Yeah, the only thing I have to say on this is if you do watch it, watch it with some of your friends.
Yeah.
Get a bottle of Jack Daniels, a Jameson, whatever liquor you love to drink. And every time they say the word Anita,
yeah,
take a shot.
Good point.
Yeah, because they say her. I don't know any other character's name, but I know Anita.
Yeah, me neither. She's the only one I know.
Because they say it constantly.
You're right.
So.
Ugh. I would never put myself through it again. I've seen it twice. I can't. Yeah. I couldn't do it again.
No, I'm good on this. So, all right. Well, that will end part one of this. And part two will be coming out shortly after this airs. Yes.
So listen to that. And yeah, part two, just to preface it, we're going to be reviewing 1988's The Blob, 1998 or 9. House on Haunted Hill, and 2007.
1998.
It's 8, right?
I think it's 8.
1998's House on Haunted Hill. Around. It's the one. Yeah, it's whatever. It's the one with what's his name? Jeffrey Rush or whatever his name is. Yeah. And 2007's Halloween. So, look forward to that.